many pop-ups. Okay, so we're going to cover corollary discharge. It's a prediction machine. We talk about vision a lot. We talk about sensory processing a lot. There's four things that every autistic person battles. Four things that every autistic person has, the autistic phenotype. One is sensory processing, fast sensory processing, problems with sensory processing. We talk about the destination, point A to point B. We're going to really map that out here, how some are fast and then they're delayed. And then a second phenotype that every autistic person has is speech and language. The third one are GI problems. It's no surprise that GI is helping the autistic phenotype. And then circadian rhythms. These four, we could even throw in mitochondria, because mitochondria is probably maybe upstream of all of these. Every autistic phenotype, every person with autism has these four problems. Now, the severity of them is different. So we're going to talk about sensation perception and this little corollary discharge. Every sensation, every sensory process has this. It's a prediction machine. It's happening before the actual movement. It's very fascinating. So we're going to just talk about vision, though, because we're going to do a video about reading. I'm going to explain, I think it's going to be personal, about my complications with reading. And then with the visual thinking, this will be involved with the visual thinking and how the autistic phenotype, the vision, the visual cortex, and all the vision sensations are just heightened. It's just why eye gaze is not that complicated for the autistic phenotype. Now, you might think it's complicated because people want you to think that the autistic phenotype is hard to explain. It's not. They just want the confusion. So I kind of pre-drew this out, but I think we'll just do it bigger. We're just going to do this bigger. So I might even, let's just do the retina here, okay? Looks like a lot of different sketches that we've done. So the retina into the thalamus here. But I really want this to be big. That way we can see it. Remember, I'm going to draw these two little humps. But the medial geniculate nucleus and then the lateral geniculate nucleus. The medial geniculate is for auditory relay. And then the lateral geniculate is for vision, visual relay. And then just right under it is the superior colliculus. And then right under the superior colliculus is the inferior colliculus. And then we have the mesencephalon here, and then the pons, and then the brainstem. The mesencephalon is right here. Remember, these have spatial relationships here. The mesencephalon and this part of the thalamus. If you splice the mesencephalon, if you splice the brainstem, you can see parts of the thalamus on the mesencephalon. These are so close that they can just reach out and high-five each other. These are fast-acting processes. So with vision, there are two pathways. That's what we're going to map out here. That way we can really see it. And I'll do it in different colors, okay? So this first pathway, the one that involves the corollary discharge, we will do this in red, I guess. I had to make a decision there. Remember, with these two different pathways, the superior colliculus here receives 10 to 15% of the fibers. So we're going to the retina, to the superior colliculus here, okay? The superior colliculus is a machine-like structure. This thing is very fascinating. So like with things like barn owls, those types of species, it's called optic tectum. There's a lot of good research about the optic tectum in barn owls. I mean, they have those funky head movements and their vision. They can just pick up targets very fast and accurate. It's because they're optic tectum. So about 10 to 15% of the projections coming in from the retina will go to the superior colliculus. Retina to the superior colliculus. The superior colliculus will kind of We'll talk amongst its little nuclei, okay? This is the raw information coming in. This is what I know about that raw information coming in. So it will have some crosstalk here within it. And also drew out, if we're looking at it from the backside here, remember this is the midline right here. So ipsilateral, each hemisphere, and then contralateral or both hemispheres, okay? So I should say ipsilateral this way, contralateral this way. Now, you know, probably, like, the vision, it kind of does this number right here. It kind of crosses hemispheres. we're going to bypass that. That's not important for the corollary discharge. So the lateral geniculate is here, and the superior colliculus is here. Superior colliculus is above the inferior colliculus. So vision, 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 vision. Auditory down here, and auditory in the medial. So the superior colliculus will talk within itself. And then there's a nuclei here in the thalamus, right here. Medial dorsal nuclei, subdivision of the thalamus. Now, this is a relay station, but it's not for sensation. It's for prediction relay, essentially. So the superior colliculus will send some information. It will talk up to the medial dorsal thalamus, MD. So the next spot is superior colliculus to the MD. Within the superior colliculus, though, before it speaks up to the MD, it's formulating a map, this corollary discharge. It's putting together these instructions, and then it sends it up to the thalamus. Remember, the thalamus is a workhorse. It's a sensory relay station. Plus, it's receiving a bunch of information from the cortex. The medial dorsal thalamus will speak up, way up here. It's a distal connection to the frontal eye fields. The frontal eye fields are roughly right here. So we have, we'll just call it right here, FEF, frontal eye fields. The corollary discharge is going with it, CD. The frontal eye fields will continue to speak back and forth to the medial dorsal thalamus. It's kind of a feedback loop. It's giving it updates. Okay, this is what's happening. This is how I need to adjust. Remember, because this is a relay station for predictions, it's just helping the frontal eye fields receive information about, okay, what's next? The frontal eye fields will speak over to the parietal lobe. There's a subdivision called the lateral parietal and the posterior parietal, lateral, intraparietal, and the posterior parietal. It's kind of this garbage nomenclature. You don't need to know this. But what you do need to know is the parietal lobe is kind of piecing together the information from the corollary discharge and the information from the frontal eye fields to help sensory integration. Okay, so we have MD to the frontal eye fields to the parietal. The parietal will speak back down to the thalamus. Now, here's a big part that I really want us to remember. We have the thalamus has this thalamic reticular nucleus, okay? This projection here is going to be heavily guarded by the thalamic reticular nucleus because the TRN is protecting the lateral geniculate. So the parietal to the TRN, because the final destination here is the lateral geniculate nucleus. Remember, this is all inhibition. Parv albium interneurons is the majority of this. And then there's some somatostatin. Both of them are inhibition. Parv albium are the GABA A type receptors, ionotrophic, and those are fast acting. The somatostatin inhibition are metabotrophic, and they're just kind of zoning this whole area here, just providing some inhibition. That parv albium is more precise inhibition, especially for something like this with vision, because it's so fast. Even if you don't have autism, vision comes in so fast. There's so much going on. So parietal down to the TRN into the thalamic reticular nucleus and then to the lateral geniculate nucleus. Okay. A big problem is already happening. But since we're at the lateral geniculate and the lack of GABA, we're adding on problems. Because we always talk about with sensory processing is point A to point B. If you're in a destination, if you have a destination. So point A to point B, visual cortex, essentially. And there's different stops along the way. Stop one, stop two, stop three, stop four, stop five. And then finally, stop six will get you to the visual cortex. For the autistic phenotype, this stop right here, this stop right here goes fast. This distal connection up is slow. This connection right here is a problem for the autistic phenotype. This corollary discharge comes weak and slow. So now the frontal eye field is behind. It has to speak over to the parietal and it's downstream. All of these things downstream are implicated. Once this pathway right here gets to the lateral geniculate, the eye movement finally happens. All of this is before the eye movement happens. So in this pathway, this is the first path. The parietal will speak over to the visual cortex as well, and the information coming down that reaches the lateral geniculate will bypass V1. V1 is out here. Okay, if you ever look at the visual cortex, it's this kind of, you know, visual cortex 1, then 2, 3, 4, and so forth. It goes to the back and then works its way back towards the mental. This pathway will skip V1 and just go to V2. It doesn't need the V1 because that's raw sensory information. There's nothing about this that is raw sensory. This is all a motor pathway to prepare the living organism to eye gaze. The second pathway of the retina, we will do in green if it shows up. So the retina to the lateral geniculate, this is 85 to 90% of the projections from the retina, okay? So it hits the lateral geniculate, again, heavily guarded by the TRN, and then it goes to the V1, and then it will go through the visual cortex. And so it will kind of meet, these pathways will kind of meet at V2 and then kind of just put together more sensory integration, making more sense of what is happening, because this is what we're talking about, sensation to perception, okay? So the second pathway is kind of simple for what we're covering. Retina to the LGN, LGN to the visual cortex, 85 to 90%, because this is all raw information coming in. Remember the sensation to perception, because that's what we're talking about here. Sensations are extracting physical phenomena from the environment that allows the living organism to understand its surroundings so it can have that information and so it can move, it can navigate life. A big part of what's going on in this pathway, though, is orienting the attention of the living organism to the environment. The frontal eye fields will also speak down to these cranial nerves. We talked about those in the mesencephalon episodes. There are some powerful cranial nerves, especially for eyes. Cranial nerve 3, 4, and 6 are big with this. Ocular motor, trochlear, and abducens, okay? 3 and 4 are in the mesencephalon here. Abducens, cranial nerve 6, is just kind of posterior of that. Abducens is the easy one. It makes sure your eyes are moving identically. Now, the eyes are independent structures. They are not connected so much, but they move with precise timing and accuracy. That's because cranial nerve 6 it's the only role that it has. Most of the other cranial nerves, or maybe even all of them, have multiple roles, multiple functions. 6, that's it. That's all it does, because it's a big task. So we're orienting the attention of the living organism to the environment here, okay? At this point here, and at this point here, the eye movement happens. Everything here, especially with this corollary discharge, is preparing the living organism about it, what it might see, about the outcome of this motor action that I'm about to do. In large part, this is built, remember, from the superior colliculus, based off of experience, based off of expectation. The brain is a prediction machine. That's exactly what the corollary discharge is. It's a prediction machine. That way it's informed. Now, if you just think about something, think about how much better off you are whenever you know what to expect in life versus when you don't know what to expect in life. That's preparing. This is making the sensory processing and sensation to perception easier, because one of the main goals of the brain is survival and conserving energy. It allocates it based off of this information from the sensory integration. It will allocate, activate, and inactivate regions so it can perform the task that it's deciding at this point that it needs to do. One thing that the brain is doing is providing predictions for itself. The central nervous system, the brain, and spine, those are only involved in organisms that move. This is what we're talking about, though. sensation to perception, and navigating. Now, with the autistic phenotype, there's some big problems here that I will highlight. I don't know which color to do them in now, though. We'll do blue. So at this point, this one is delayed. So that means everything downstream is delayed. This is delayed. This is delayed. Remember, this is the eye movement. Delayed, delayed, delayed. So if this prediction is delayed, it makes it complicated for the living organism to orient to the environment. A second thing that I want to mention is how much input is this getting, the lateral geniculate, because it is flooded because of, in large part, the lack of inhibition coming here, both the superior cuticulous pathway and straight to the lateral geniculate. Here's another good example about point A to point B. Retina to the lateral geniculate to V1 and then through V1. Because V1 isn't really making a whole lot of sense of the information coming in. That's why there's up to 7 kind of areas of the visual cortex. You can get into like the extra striate. If you want to look up the nomenclature of that, like striate, extra striate, and then a lot of interactions. Remember, as well, with each downstream connection, regions and projections will branch off more and more. So the retina has 2 projections, basically, superior cuticulus, lateral geniculate. But the superior cuticulus will start to speak to more areas, like the thalamus and the medial dorsal. And then the medial dorsal will speak to other areas. But the frontal eye fields, once it gets to here, there's so many more projections that are happening here. Same with the lateral geniculus to visual cortex. Once it's through the visual cortex, projections are just everywhere. One thing about the lateral geniculate with his eye movement is, in addition to the lack of inhibition, and with the space-time complication, another thing that's mentioned in quite detail, quite frequently, with the autistic phenotype, especially with sensation perception, is signal to noise. Signal or salient attention. What is important? What does the brain need to remember with the allocation, the activation and inactivation? What does it need to send attention to versus noise? Whenever things are just chaotic, overwhelmed, doesn't know what to do. Kind of, it loses its role as a director, as an orchestrator, a conductor. Remember, we used conductor before. So because of this corollary discharge and this pathway right here is delayed, there's a lot more noise involved with the autistic phenotype in the outside world. Now, if you remember what autism translates into, autos. Automatic, automobile means self. This is in large part because the central nervous system, remember, is designed to receive information from the environment so we can move. It relies on information from the environment. The autistic phenotype, too much. So their bias is inward. Whenever you have autistic children that's not making eye contact with you, especially if you're going to accuse them of not listening, paying attention, you're wrong. And with that experience and expectation and neuroplasticity, you are harming them. You're not satisfying anything except for yourself. A lot of what humans do with speech is satisfying the self. Lisa Feldman Barrett is really good on that. The sense of shoulds, I believe it's called. The human will speak just to calm themselves. And that's a bad thing. But with these pathways being kind of overwhelmed, sensory overwhelm, overload, and that biasing the organism to the self. Remember from the OCD episode, okay? Let's just say we extract a specific cell out of here, okay? We draw a specific cell. Doesn't have to be perfect, okay? We got a cell here. Yep, pretty good one. And then these axons down here will have a connection, right? It will go connect to something. And each connection is building a summary, building a story of what is happening. As we repeat things with repetition, Hebbian learning and so forth, and cells that fire together, wire together, remember the serotonin and sensory map, remember we're already diffused. We're not refined in these connections. If we zoom in here to this, these cells communicating to each other, The more we repeat things, the bigger that connection grows in size. Morphology. The bigger the connection is, the more the brain is going to prefer that connection. So we just become who we are. These are just basic trait building, personality building. We are who we are because of this. That's 101. These bigger connections will be preferred. It has to work. The brain and the living organism has to work for this one to hit, for this one to connect and have meaning. Because the brain, the central nervous system just wants to respond. It's passive. So this connection, whatever this connection means, will get preference. And it doesn't matter if you're autistic. You have this ability to be comfortable within yourself, and you have an ability to just absorb information at high rates of speed, or not. Or you're a mathematician, or you're an electrician, or you're a basketball player. Whatever skills you have, these connections are going to be bigger, larger, morphology for the things that you need to do to execute those tasks. So some benefits of this situation here are obviously not external. The benefits here are internal, again, with the accelerated learning, because we can grab so much information at high rates of speed, because these projections coming in early are loaded. Now, you can find information with event-related potentials, ERPs, and using things like DTIs, diffusion tensor imaging, and they will use something called fractional entrosophy, and it's called FA. It measures the water movement of connections to see which ones are stronger. So you can see data with ERPs, you can see data with EEGs. Remember, they use a measurement instrument like N170, but you'll see N with the EEGs, and then 170 is just the time, whatever this is. Doesn't matter. Just how much time it takes to get through here. MEGs will use an M and then the time. M170. Remember, EEGs are better at measuring kind of local connections. MEGs are better at measuring distal connections. Okay. And then fMRI. But over the last month, there was some controversy with using fMRI and the accuracy of it. So tread lightly with that. Now, earlier I mentioned all of this is happening before the eye movement. So this is happening minus 60 milliseconds before the eye movement. Let's get closer. The superior colliculus will begin to speak to one another from side to side and within each other. And that happens at roughly minus 50 milliseconds. The superior colliculus will reach up to the medial dorsal thalamus at about minus 45 milliseconds, okay? This is normal rate. The medial dorsal thalamus to the frontal eye fields will happen roughly minus 25 milliseconds from eye movement. And then the frontal eye fields over to the parietal at about minus 15 seconds before eye movement. And then this is minus 15 to minus 5. Let's say minus 5. And then the eye movement happens. Now with the autistic phenotype, these are delayed. And they're weak. The information isn't as strong because of that myelination in large part. Things like the leucovorin will help myelinate these. And that's in large part of what leucovorin is doing. I guess before we wrap up is the gamma waves as well. Gamma waves are useful whenever we're hitting the visual cortex because we want that fast sensation. But the autistic phenotype is higher gamma waves. And remember, there are things like alpha and beta, and this thalamic reticular nucleus that's helped modulating it is off. So the brain waves are also important here. But I wanted to cover corollary discharge and this independent visual processing pathway that's independent of visual processing, because it will be heavily involved with the reading episode and visual thinking and understanding why the autistic phenotype has problems with eye gaze. And this rate of information coming in is flooded. So one thing to just always remember is just understand that the autistic is paying attention. Don't be self-serving. Don't be self-satisfying and think that the autistic is not paying attention. The autistic knows exactly what is happening in the environment, more so than what you could ever know because of the rate of information coming in. Stop harming them. Stop overwhelming this autistic phenotype, especially the children, because they're running off and you're not helping. This is very, very fascinating because you don't even know you're doing this. The brain ability to survive and prepare the living organism for all of the information coming in is fantastic. Two other things before we wrap up is, now, whenever an autistic is being assessed, does this child have autism or not? One thing that they'll probably will do are processing speed test assessments. Now, the thing about that is it requires motor movement. It's not just vision. You have to receive the information that you're looking at, process it in both of these, and then activate the sensory motor here and the basal ganglia. Remember, the FEF, the frontal eye fields, will attach down to the dorsal striatum too to help input the motor movement, provide some information. But the basal ganglia will have to be recruited and areas of the brainstem to execute the motor movement, because there's a lot of tracking and identifying and marking with processing speeds with assessments. So it's not uncommon that the autistic can have a lot of information coming in, but they can't execute and coordinate the movement that's appropriate. And it's not uncommon that motor movements, things like apraxia even, for the more severe, are complicated for autism, the autistic phenotype. There's no doubt about that. I guess before we wrap up is, this is also used in touch and audition. The auditory will do this. So it's a very powerful thing with the corollary discharge. So we'll use this as kind of a introduction, because we will process the visual cortex, visual thinking, and the reading problems, and how it's hard to have fluid eye gaze and process all of the information coming in, like especially with reading and the visual thinking, transposing everything, all those visual words into movies and so forth. So there's a lot going on for the autistic phenotype. It's very complicated stuff.